my backdoor neighbor. So the backup crew took over, and now we have, instead of an Air Force test pilot going to fly the Air Force number one experiment, now we have a Navy test pilot who's going to fly the number one Air Force experiment. Now, this is the way you should have told it, Jim, from the Navy. Now, when some engineers in Baltimore decided that it would be a good idea maybe to train in a different way, and a few of you test pilots said, well, how in the world can you simulate being in a vacuum up there by being underwater, you know, moving around? Well, see, I'd been scuba diving for 8 or 9 years at the time, and I really felt that this was going to work, and it really did. And we did a lot of good training. I can remember standing in the pool, waist deep, seeing Gemini 11 lift off. You don't remember that? Well, where were you? You were supposed to be there with me. No, he was watching me, yeah. Well, anyway, Gemini 11's rendezvous didn't go too well either. So the pressure really was sort of on us. The last flight out of four main missions of the whole Gemini program were long-duration space flight, computer guided re-entry, rendezvous in space, and spacewalking, so that we would know how to do things out on the lunar surface. And I had done a little bit of studying about rendezvous. As a matter of fact, while I was at MIT, I got a call from Ed White, who I'd known from West Point. We were in the same fighter squadron. And he said, you know, I've been through the test pilot school, got a master's degree, I'm testing airplane. And he said, I'm going to volunteer for this second selection process of astronauts. This
was
in 62.
Was EVA,
I know.
How do we solve that problem?
Well, I'm getting to it.
And using water immersion.
Because Ed said, I'm qualified. And I said, well, okay, so I haven't been through the test pilot school, but I'm doing some pretty interesting things up here at MIT. Now,
Buzz,
I was picked in the third group. Now, I show up in this program with all these experts, and I happen to get involved in the training of some of the astronauts, Wally Schirra and Tom Stafford and some others for the early rendezvous flights. So I remember having a conversation with Deke Slayton. I said, you know, I would really like to be along on one of these rendezvous flights in the Gemini program. And when you ask Deke Slayton something, you don't get an answer right away. So I went out, and the next thing I know, Jim Lovell and I are assigned to the backup crew on Gemini 10, which means that they have, when flies, they have a crew for 11 and 12, so we were going to be prime crew on Gemini 13. There is no 13, so Buzz was not going to fly in the Gemini program until there was a tragedy. My backdoor neighbor. And so we backed up 9, and then we became prime crew on 12.
Buzz, what were you, in the EVA, what were you able to do
in the EVA in 12 that Gene was not able to do in 9?
Well, we had excellent foot restraints by this time. I mean, you could put your foot in a foot restraint, and there was just no getting out of it. You could take one foot back and lean over, and you were still attached. They were called the golden slippers. They were really wonderful. And as I was training for this astronaut maneuvering unit, and I really felt like we were going to have a really good, successful last mission. And somehow NASA felt that the series of missions where spacewalking had not been too successful, and they decided to cancel this number one Air Force experiment in the whole Gemini program. And that was my biggest mistake, not to tell them that I really knew what I was doing with the kind of training underwater. But I let it go, and they removed that experiment, and instead there were just sort of Mickey Mouse things to do in the back of the adapter, hook a piece of Velcro together, screw this thing, and throw this switch. And so obviously it was a very successful rendezvous.
But the EVA, yeah.
So what did we do? We went to a Navy place, Pensacola, and everybody got checked out in scuba diving. So even the Navy guys.
So you had a successful Gemini 12, which was the end of the Gemini program, right, Gene?
Yeah.
That was it. So then
we're
on to Apollo, and of course, Randy, did you want to jump in with something there that I cut you off? I apologize.
No, we're fine. At the time that we were flying Gemini 12, many of us were working that mission. We were also getting ready for Apollo.
Right.
So we had the first of the Saturn launches there. So basically we had both control rooms up and operating there. And that was probably one of the toughest times from the standpoint of scheduling and training we ever had.
So Apollo 1, you know, the tragedy of the fire in Apollo 1 and losing Ed White, Virge Grissom, Roger Chaffee. Frank Borman, you were the only astronaut on the investigating committee, the 21-month period. What happened in those 21 months? What was the process? What was learned? And how confident were you when you got to Apollo 7?
Well, I think the genius of Jim Webb, who was the NASA administrator, shown through there, because he convinced Congress to allow NASA to investigate itself, and they appointed a group of people, of which I was one. But the investigation was no holds barred, and it was a very hard-hitting indictment of both NASA and North American. And I think that out of that came the Block 2, we called it an improved Apollo spacecraft that eventually was very, very successful. And I honestly believe, had it not been for the fire, we might have had an in-flight tragedy that would have canceled the program. So I think that NASA at that point was probably the finest managed federal bureaucracy that's ever been in place. And sometimes I look back on it. I look back on it, and from the country standpoint, I think we'd have been a lot better off if NASA had been running the Defense Department during Vietnam rather than who was.
Fred Hayes, you know, we're not up to 13, obviously, yet, because we're going in sequence here. But what, in terms of personnel and training, what were you doing while all these other things are going on to bring you up to speed for whatever you would be assigned down the road?
Well, at the front end, when I joined the program, was same as Al described. We went through about 6 months of textbook training, some rudimentary field trips, first geology field trips, and then we got assigned to different disciplines. And I got assigned to Jim McDivitt, who was going to fly the first limb, and Ed Mitchell and I. And he gave us very simple marching orders. He said, I want you to go to Grumman and make sure I got a good limb. That was it. So Ed and I together, I'm sure mutually, I know I spent 7 months out of 19 months at Grumman in test. And I'd been in test in every vehicle up through six. In fact, I did not do any tests on the one we flew on 13. But I'd been in vehicle test, sometimes sleeping limbs. I probably had several weeks sleeping in limbs when the test would get halted and you just stopped and waited for next things to get figured out and proceed. So that was kind of what I was doing in that period. In fact, I was up at Grumman at the time the Apollo 1 fire came, and Jim called me and said, come home.
So even though you weren't assigned to cruise at this point, and back to Gene for a moment, everybody was deeply involved in this whole engineering process, working together to make the whole program work?
I think we were very fortunate because not only had the top-level leadership that made things happen, we had a mission control team now that had become probably the finest systems engineers that existed in the planet at that time, because generally our training process, you started training early, was to send the controllers out to the factory, get to know the people who are doing the design and testing, bring back the bundle assembly drawings that was used to build the spacecraft, translate them into documentation that you could use in real time. We did the same thing up at Draper Labs, get the program lists and then decompose that to stuff that was useful. So this is the sort of background we had when we went in to help Frank and the team that was looking at what do we got to do different for this next generation, the Block 2 spacecraft.